Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
And they said they absolutely stand by their decision to exclude you. Quote, coming to the UK is a privilege that we refuse to extend to those who abuse our standards or values and undermine our way of life. What do you say to that?
Well, I would have thought that one of the standards and values of British life would have been giving a person an opportunity to meet their accuser. I would have thought that one of the standards and values of the British people would be giving a person an opportunity to explain whether or not they meant what they read somewhere. I'd like to know where Jackie Smith got these excerpts, because I think I know where they came from. After all, my show is not broadcast in the United Kingdom. So who in the United States government sent these to Jackie Smith in an attempt to destroy the conservative movement in America?
Yeah, well, I wonder if the standards and values of England include polluting the Gulf of Mexico. I wonder if the standards and values of England include using shoddy equipment and faulty inspections when drilling in the backyard of the United States of America. I wonder if the standards and values of Britain include permitting real terrorists, the children of real terrorists and murderers, to visit England and to spew real hatred and to talk about real murder. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Savage Nation. At the risk of your displeasure, I feel I must talk a little bit more about the fact that Britain, under the so-called conservative government, has continued the exact same policies of the Socialist Labour Party that preceded them, which is amazing to me. Should be amazing to you. You know, I have a black colleague, and I was speaking with him about my being banned in the UK this morning. And I said to him, even the so-called conservative regime in England is refusing to undo the damage done to my name and reputation, let alone my personal safety. So my black friend said to me, you know, Savage, you're being treated by the British the way blacks were treated by southern white bigots in the 1940s and 50s in the South. I was stunned, frankly, by his observation. I said, you know, there is a great deal of truth in what you said. You see, in the South before the 60s, black people in the South were routinely convicted of crimes without a fair trial. I want you to think about what I'm saying. I, Michael Savage, have been tried and convicted of a crime by the British government without the benefit of any trial nor the right to defend myself. In the Jim Crow era, racists in the South made sure that blacks had separate and inferior accommodations on trains, buses, and in hotels, while in the England of today, I have been denied any accommodation whatsoever. In the South of the pre-civil rights era, even drinking fountains had signs on them that said whites only. Well, today there's a sign in England that says leftists only. Michael Savage need not apply. I believe England selected Michael Savage for discrimination because I'm not a Muslim. I believe they attack me because I'm a conservative. I believe they attack me because I stand for national sovereignty and national identity in a world where they want that to dissolve. And they attack me because they want to appease their own guilty consciences with regard to their inherent racism and anti-nationalism. England's liberalism allows the virus of radical Islam to spread unabated, while conservatism would contain this virus, which threatens to destroy the entire world, and conservatism is banned. Despite a new prime minister, Britain's travel ban for Michael Savage continues. Britain bans Michael Savage again and welcomes Che Guevara's daughter. The Savage Nation versus the Dying Nation. These are some of the wonderful blog items that have been written. Probably one of the best, or my favorite thus far, is the one written by Humberto Fontova, and that has been posted on michaelsavage.com. Now, Humberto Fontova is of Cuban ancestry. He knows what Fidel Castro and Che Guevara really are. What sickens me and turns my stomach is the way the vermin in the American media are glorifying that mass murderer, Fidel Castro, every time he burps. They make believe he's the father of the world. The man is a murderer, a mass murderer. And yet the idiots in the media glorify him. They hold him up as a role model, a man who's killed so many. Do you know that in Castro's Cuba, I don't think you know this. Do you know any of what I'm about to tell you? Do you know that in Castro's Cuba, more people were killed proportionate to the population than in the early years of the Hitler regime? Do you know that in Castro's Cuba, more people were killed than in the Stalinist regime and in the early days of the Stalinist regime? And yet, they still have pictures of Che Guevara on the walls of universities. Now, it gets even worse. What gets me is that Che Guevara's daughter was invited to the United Kingdom after I was banned from the United Kingdom. And here's what he writes. He said, instead of the false contrition, groveling, and confessions that Stalin, Mao, and Che Guevara demanded from the subjects they accused of thought crimes before murdering them, Michael Savage sought to repudiate his listing alongside terrorists and Nazis by resorting to the tenets of Western jurisprudence and presenting evidence to the contrary. He writes, in today's Britain, what's left of the Magna Carta only works in favor of actual Islamic terrorists. 1 month after insulting and banning Michael Savage last summer, Britain opened their arms to Che Guevara's daughter, Alida. The occasion was a celebration in London titled Cuba 50, billed as the biggest European celebration in the 50th anniversary of the Cuban Revolution. Really? And then he writes, Britain threw the continent's biggest party commemorating 50 years of Castro's Stalinist regime, which jailed political prisoners at a higher rate than Stalin's, murdered political prisoners at a higher rate than pre-war Hitler's, and came closest of anyone to plunging the world into nuclear war. Che's daughter was there to promote, in her own words, my father's ideals, his concerns, and his ambitions. She said, I believe that my father is a banner to the world. If we could only follow his example, the world would be a much more beautiful place. So, Humberto writes, fine, let's have a look at Alida's father's ambitions, keeping in mind that what got Michael Savage banned was his purported fostering of extremist views and his so-called hate speech. I will quote now Ernesto Che Guevara. Hatred, he said, is the central element of our struggle. Hatred that is intransigent. Hatred so violent that it propels a human being beyond his natural limitations, making him violent and cold-blooded killing machine. We reject any peaceful approach. Violence is inevitable. To establish socialism, rivers of blood must flow. The imperialist enemy must feel like a hunted animal wherever he moves. Thus we'll destroy him. These hyenas, the Americans, are fit only for extermination. We must keep our hatred alive and fan it to paroxysm. The victory of socialism is well worth millions of atomic victims. Che Guevara, in a speech in 1966 to the Tricontinental Conference in Havana. He writes, no rational person would require much elasticity of definition to classify Alida's father, Che Guevara, this banner to the world, as hate speech. And Alida Guevara, in an interview with The Guardian during the visit to England, boasted of her fervent fostering of a father's view. Listen to this. Here's what she said in England. I want you to ask yourself, do you think Che Guevara's daughter could provoke intra-community violence? Listen to what she said. I want to be like Che and fight until final victory. Then you feel elated. It is preferable to sink in the sea than to betray the glory that once lived. Ladies and gentlemen, this is it. Gun butts and bayonets bashing in the brains of the people of the United States of America are not what you are experiencing. You're not experiencing socialism's gun butts and bayonets yet. What you're experiencing is the brain beating of an incessant propaganda machine, both in Britain and the United States. Now, what do I mean by that? It's very simple what I mean by that. It means that they let mass murderers' daughters in to talk about mass murder and socialism, and they ban a conservative who believes in nationalism. I'll let you figure out the battle that is ongoing and what side you have to be on. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I'm not going to sit here and bellyache to you. You know, I just want you to know about it because it's been basically hushed up by the U.S. media. We've gone from Don Corleone to a Don Corbellone in one generation. From Don Corleone to Don Corbellone in one generation. I don't know my own country anymore. I don't know what country I'm living in. I don't recognize it. I don't recognize the nation I'm living in. I've never seen anything like it. And the worst to them are the people who wrap themselves in the conservative flag and are acting exactly the same as the liberals. They call themselves conservatives. They call themselves the alternative. They call themselves the opposition. I never saw anything like this. It's one and the same. I wonder if Polanski, now that he's free and sleazy in Switzerland, if Roman Polanski will be invited to Britain to receive a special medal from the government for having gotten away with rape and child molestation. That might be a new value that they can, a new standard and value of the British government. Portland, Maine, welcome to the Savage Nation. David, what's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, you don't have to apologize for defending your position on this issue. This is outrageous. Yesterday you mentioned several authors whose works have been banned from England, but you've been banned bodily from entering England, and here's the outrage. The outrage is our Secretary of State is silent on this issue, where an American citizen is banned from traveling to a country for exercising their First Amendment rights. The second outrage is your cohorts in the media are silent as well. And this has really exposed all the hollow men and women in government and in the media for what they are.
Right. I don't have to name names. I don't have to name names, and I'm not going to do it again because many listeners to my show listen to other shows and talk radio, and they're frankly bewildered. But they know who it is who has not spoken out, and they know that it is now a badge of shame that they are wearing. They know that. It doesn't mean they're going to stop listening to them, but they know that they're shills for the Republican Party and the government media complex, moreover. I don't know what to say. I can name the three. You got Matt Drudge, you got Joe Farah, and I think I've stopped counting the fingers on one hand, who have stood up to the plate right off the bat and said, wait a minute, this is wrong, and we're going to cover it. That's it. That was the beginning and the end of the list.
Name any other spokesperson or celebrity in the media. If this happened to them, it would be the top news story for the day.
What if a liberal was banned from entering, Britain? Tell me if they would let that story go. Why would the Associated Press not cover this? Why would the Associated Press, filled with such brilliant students of journalism, members of the Society of Professional Journalists, how could they not cover a story like this?
Of course it's...
We are living in an age of absolute and total propaganda where a dirty, filthy street slut who paints her fingernails and says F you to the judge is a bigger story than an American member of the media being banned. Or when a fraud on Fox News goes on the air with fake glasses on his nose, a high school dropout, and pretends he's a professor, and he's going to create a university on the air. The man goes on the air and paints his fingernails. That's unbelievable to me.
This new conservative government in England had...
Or I'll go a step further. France today approved a ban on burkas. The entire French parliament voted overwhelmingly in favor of a ban on wearing those throwback veils over the face in public, a move which will make the Muslim burqa illegal in France. There were 336 votes for the bill and just one against at the National Assembly. Even the French recognize the threat of Islamism, but not the British. The British have capitulated the same way Neville Chamberlain capitulated to Hitler. Where is the Churchill? Many of you thought that... The new Prime Minister Cameron would be a sort of modified Churchill. Well, now we found out what it is. So I don't want to complain. I'm not going to sit here. Many people are offended by they think I'm complaining. I mean, it's a news story. I think I have an obligation to cover it. I'm certainly not going to talk about it for the rest of my career, but I think you need to know about it because there's a misconception that I'm permitted in Britain, but it's an outrage. And it should be an outrage to everyone who listens to talk radio. It should be an outrage to everyone who calls in shows. And frankly, you should call every show making believe you're calling on their subject. And when you get in a conversation with them, slip it over to this. See what happens. See how quickly the doors slam in your face from the so-called conservatives in the media. See how quickly they don't want to talk about it. I may be the first banned in Britain, but I won't be the last. I can guarantee you that if you let this government get away with this with me, I will not be the last. And I think that's all I'm going to say about it. I mean, later on in the show, I have a very a good friend of mine, Laura Ingram's coming on with a new book. We're going to do other things on the show today. But if you have a comment to make on this very important subject, Brendan in New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, your voice and your struggles might be the only voice in this country that's, that could open up people's eyes to the fact that, you know, Great Britain is a historically exploitive and tyrannical country that very little regard for the decency of human rights. All you need to do is look at see the Orangemen marches through the Catholic neighborhoods of Northern Ireland today. It's in the Daily News website.
Yeah, I know. I have it on my website. I know the oppression of the Irish Catholics is a blight on the reputation of the UK. But you don't have to look any further than how they exploited the colonies. You know, but I don't want to go there. I've always been an Anglophile in a certain way. I suppose it was because I'm an immigrant son and I was poor. I always thought that the British accent meant that they were high class. Little did I know otherwise. You know, every furrier in New York, the minute he made a little money in his fur business, he hired a girl that looked like Twiggy who had a British accent in order to bamboozle the other guys from Bensonhurst who thought that a British accent was concomitant with class. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. And these reporters with British accents and nothing to back it up, they get, you know, on 60 Minutes.
Yeah, right. Tick-tock, tickety-tickety-tickety-tock. I don't want to bash the British because I'll tell you a little secret. Most of the British subjects supported me when this first happened. They opposed what the government did. They voted for Cameron because they thought he would be different. The British people themselves are opposed to what was done to me. It is the British government that is separate from the British people. Make no mistake about it. You get it? New York, Anna, welcome to the Savage Nation topic, please.
The other conservative commentators are never going to honor you and mention you and what's going on because you're way too smart for them. You require knowledge of history and for people to really look at, use their expansive minds and look at what's going on, and that's just way too scary for them. They would lose all control of their weak messages.
Well, wait a minute now. I'm not as smart as the high school dropout who's created an online university and wears glasses on his nose. He's really the smartest man in the universe.
Savage.
So the French Parliament has voted to ban burqas, face veils, over the face, in public, which will make the Muslim burqa illegal. But what's interesting is this. Most members of the main opposition group, the Socialist Party, refuse to participate in the vote. Now, why would socialists want women to walk around in veils? The bigger question is, why do the socialists support this concept of turning a woman into chattel? The bigger question is, if burqas were to be banned by the U.S. Senate and the House, would Eric Holder file a lawsuit? Yeah. What if the Congress passed a law which said you can't wear burqas in public in America because it's an affront to women? Would Eric Holder file a lawsuit? Sure he would. There's no question about it. Now you understand what kind of governments are running the West and how this weakened, hollowed out Western civilization of ours could easily collapse. It's like Swiss cheese right now. And what do I have to do with all of it? I'll let you figure it out. We found secret emails when I was originally banned that had statements such as the PM and the foreign minister, the prime minister and the foreign minister, approve of this because he, Savage, balances the list. Meaning they banned Muslims. They banned the Muslim terrorists. They banned the actual killers who were predominantly Muslim. Then they threw in some Nazi skinheads from Europe who were in jail in Russia, by the way, for 10 years for killing immigrants. And then to top it off, they threw my name into the mix because the Soros-backed Media Matters group took my tapes, edited them, and sent them over there, in my opinion. So don't think this emanated from England. I just thought that by now it would be over. I'm only going to talk about it a little bit longer, and then you'll have to do what you have to do. Go to michaelsavage.com and check it all out. The stories are all up there. If you care to buy still buy a copy of the book, they're still available. It's not going to change my lifestyle one iota if you bought a million copies. But it's something you may want to have as a knowledge, a piece in your library. I realize it may not make it up to the standards of the university online of the great commentator You may not make it up to the standards of the type of books that he would have in his university library, but I do the best I can. You know, with the PhD, 2 master's degrees, and 25 books to my name, I try my best. All right, it's enough belly aching. I don't even want to do it. I don't even like the way I sound. You know, I was thinking about this today. I said, you know, Michael, you can take it any which way you want. You can make yourself into a martyr. You could walk around with a chip on your shoulder, or you could ignore it. Or you could say, let them all drop dead. I don't want to go there anyway. I'm in great company. Screw them all. No, I mean, you know, the screw them all is probably the attitude I'm really going to take. You know, screw them. Who cares? You know, I'll fight them until it's over. I'll fight them until justice is done. I may go to the European Union. I may just take this to the European Union Court of Human Rights just to embarrass the British government. Bull, whatever, I can't say the word. Bull artists, they are. Yeah. Now, I would say we could start, let's start a boycott of British goods. The problem is I don't know of any British goods. I do not know of anything Britain makes anymore. Does Britain make anything? I mean, the last Jaguar I bought was 35 years ago, but I got tired of the parts falling off the back. I couldn't find a net large enough to catch the pieces. And of course, it's been sold to the Tata company in India. It's not even owned by Britain anymore. Well, they still make the Rolls-Royce, but that's owned by Volkswagen, isn't it? Isn't Rolls-Royce owned by Volkswagen? It's something crazy like that. What do the British make anymore? Wait, they make a Rolls-Royce engine, right? But who owns Rolls-Royce? Well, I'm not going to buy a Rolls-Royce engine now? Oh, that's right. I'm not going to put it on my shopping list. I'm going to stop buying Rolls-Royce engines. That's what I'm going to do, along with the British beer. I don't drink British beer. I don't drink Australian beer. It makes me sick. The last time I had a Foster's Lager, I had a migraine for a month. No, the only beer I drink is Bavarian beer. It's the only beer I can tolerate without getting a headache because they still have the Bavarian purity laws going back to whatever the century is. I think it predates the appearance of the burqa in Europe. You want to talk about this? You don't want to talk about it? You want to talk about it? You don't want to talk about it? You want to talk about the medieval troglodytes in England and the things they're getting away with over there? You want to hear some of the interviews from the BBC radio? You want to hear some of the people who in Parliament? This is good stuff right here, Beowulf. I want you to play clip 20 from Michael Fabricant, who was a parliamentarian when this came out. Clip 20.
Well, notwithstanding the Home Secretary's answer, she will be aware that the things of which she accuses Mike Savage is equally illegal in the United States of America, and he has not faced prosecution there. So does she realize how ludicrous her ban is? Does she realize the disrepute she has put this country in the eyes of many right-seeing people and indeed left-seeing people in the United States of America? And does she equally plan to ban Howard Stern, Rush Limbaugh, and other middle-aged, white, ordinary American radio presenters?
Hear, hear! The real Britain still speaks. One out of 1,000, the same way we have it here. Now let's hear 21, crisp and blunt.
But for the Home Office to produce a name and shame list was a self-evident gimmick and demeaning to government, and has now produced a completely avoidable legal action which is producing splendid publicity for Michael Savage. On reflection, doesn't she think this was a mistake and the wrong way for the government to behave?
Well, it's given me a great deal of publicity, yes, and she also lost her job, and the Labour Party was thrown out, not entirely because of this scandal, but it did bring down the lady who did it to me first. It exposed all of her abuse of power, and it led to the unraveling of the Gordon Brown administration. And yet, the irony here is that a new administration, admittedly a coalition government, takes power, and they said that they would throw out such a list, and of course they did the exact opposite. So what can I tell you? Trust politicians? Not me. Not me. Rolls-Royce now owned by BMW. But who owns BMW? BMW owns Rolls-Royce. All right, they own Rolls-Royce. Good luck. So what do the British make? Does anyone know what the British make that I can ban or boycott? What can I not buy made in England? I don't know. I have nothing on me made in England. Everything I have is made in China. I'm surprised I wasn't made in China. I'm starting to look into my DNA to see if maybe I was made in China before I even know. Houston, Texas. Gary, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I was going to buy a Triumph motorcycle until this whole episode came about with you and the British government, but no more. I'll put my money in Harley Davidson back here in the USA.
You know what? Every time anyone goes out to buy a British good that costs a lot of money, I had one listener who was going to buy $20 million worth of a factory equipment, and he canceled it last year. I swear to God. We sent that to England, by the way. Thank you very much. Yes, buy Harley Davidson anyway. It's a good idea. It's a better motorcycle. What do the British make? I really don't know. Norfolk, Virginia. Juan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage, fellow Americans. 45 years ago, Che Guevara came to Bolivia, the origin country of my parents. My parents, they lived Bolivia to Venezuela 40 years ago. I grew up in Venezuela. But 10 years ago, the communism took over by Chavez in my country, Venezuela. The only option I told my wife, Penny, I don't like this for you or for her children. And 10 years ago, we came to America.
Well, hold on. So the poison of communism went from Bolivia to Venezuela, and now you find out after 18 months of Obama that the poison is spreading in America. It's no different than what you had in Venezuela. It's only in an earlier stage. That's my opinion.
Yes, that's the reason. We don't like to see this in our new country because we embrace America because this is a land.
Nobody likes to see the poison of socialism spreading through America like the virus that it is. The American people have given Obama the lowest approval rating of any president in modern American history at this phase of his career. And I guarantee you, as I sit here, that the Republicans are going to be shocked, as is the electorate, by some trick that he and Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod are going to cook up. Don't count them out yet. Mark my words. The socialists are not stupid. Vicious, yes. Dangerous, even more so. But trickier, more so yet. I predict that these people will not lose the power as you are predicting. I have several ideas in my mind as to what they will do. And I will tell you as I stand here that unless they are thrown out of office, you will have Venezuela in the north of America right as we stand here. And there will be no place for the middle class to go. He is attacking the middle class on a daily basis. That's what Obama's policies have actually done. They have not attacked the rich. The rich have gotten richer. When I say the rich, who am I talking about? I'm talking about Wall Street. Have you seen anyone on Wall Street get poorer? Most of the people who put him in power got richer. So who got hammered here? The poor didn't get poorer. They're still collecting welfare and government benefits like never before. So who is being squeezed? The middle class. Don't you understand that that's who the socialists always attack? Anyway, that's the story. Albany, New York. Bob, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah. How you doing, Doctor? My take on it is that the British government is doing you a favor. They're creating, they're making you an icon of civil liberties. And I think that history is going to be incredibly kind to you, and you'll be named in case law alongside names like
Bob. How can I be named in case law when the Associated Press, the largest press organization in America, will not even cover this story? How is it possible?
Well, you have to let history run its course, but we need you to keep up the fight, keep the story going. And one export that Britain has that no one else does is they have the worst pizza in the world.
All right, I'm going to send you a free copy of Banned in Britain, which does not contain a pizza recipe in the back. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here's a news story. A New York City appeals court today tossed out a U.S. dirty word policy as being unconstitutionally vague. The second U.S. Court of Appeals in Manhattan tossed out the Federal Communication Commission's policy after finding that it violates the First Amendment. First Amendment. A government policy that can lead to broadcasters being fined for allowing even a single curse word on live TV was found to be unconstitutionally vague here in the United States of America. Now, you would think that with a country that values freedom of speech down to a single word, this story about Michael Savage being banned from speaking or entering the country would be a big story. You would think that somebody in the Associated Press would think this is as important as some of the wonderful stories they're covering, such as about whitening your teeth or hair loss. I cannot understand how the entire Associated Press would put a cordon sanitaire around this story. I haven't any idea who is running the Associated Press these days. I mean, I don't expect anything more from my brethren in the media, in the conservative media. I know who they are. But you'd think the AP would at least cover the story, but they won't cover the story. Austin, Texas. Rick, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I'd like to comment on the reason why you're banned from Britain. I think the Obama administration is behind that. And the reason being is they know that you are the foremost conservative speaker in radio host in America. And they know that you have uncovered many things for the first time in the U.S. with your street-savvy politics. And they know that eventually you'll find something that Obama is planning, and you will uncover it for the first time, and the world will hear what Obama's trying to do. And then Obama's going to be able to come back and say, hey, don't listen to that guy. He's banning Britain. He's even banning Britain. And
I wonder if you're right. I don't really know if it came from his administration or from the previous one, but I hope to God you're wrong, because it gives me the shudders to think that my own government would do this to me with the help of a little help from their friends in the media. I really do. Well, anyway, I think a far more important story for us to talk about today is the death of a sports figure. I mean, now, this is really the most important thing in the world. You know, the owner of a team, that's more important than the First Amendment, isn't it? In a sports-mad, entertainment-mad nation, don't you think we should be talking about the owner of a sporting team? Not funny. Okay. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. God save the Queen. Let's go to New York City. Tony, welcome to the program. You're on the air from WOR. What's on your mind, Tony?
Doctor, I wouldn't wait this long to talk to anybody but you, but this has to be said. I wanted to share with you and the listening audience that on my last trip to the UK, on the outskirts of Westminster Abbey and the Tower of Big Ben, I personally witnessed two imams in full Muslim garb with megaphones preaching the most vile vitriolic hate speech, all in the presence of uniformed bodies who made no attempt to either arrest these purveyors of hatred or disperse their enthusiastic Muslim audiences. The fact that you have been banned in today's Britain is a badge of honor. You are a voice crying in the wilderness, and you must continue to do so because silence is not an option. In closing, I want to tell you, I am convinced that the English people themselves, with no effort on your part whatsoever, will force the royal family to invite you to Windsor, not only for a deserved apology, but to receive the OBE. Baruch Bashan, Doctor.
God. You are an articulate gentleman. I wish that I knew you personally. You said so much, so succinctly, without a pause. Are you still there, Tony?
Oh, sure.
Tony, what is it that you did professionally or do professionally?
I invest. I'm an investor.
Well, that says it all. That's in order to survive in this world as an investor, you have to have some savvy, correct?
Well,
are you up this year or down this year?
I'm sorry?
Are your earnings up or down in 2010?
Actually, I repeat what I just declared to you. Baruch Bashan, the blessings are here. I'm still doing well.
All right, God bless you. Thank you. Beautiful. Incredible. I have the most intelligent audience in talk radio. You know, many people don't listen to talk radio. They never did. Then some tune in and they like me, but everyone has their own audience. But there is an overlap, by the way. But I believe that the Savage Nation audience is the best educated, highest demographic financially in the country. That's what I have found to be true. It doesn't mean everyone's rich, but I am telling you that this is true from studies that I have seen. And so there it is, and that's the whole story. New York, Bernie, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Mike. I think it's outrageous that your brothers in the conservative media on radio are not all over this story. I mean, here in New York, your competitor, I won't mention his name, but we know the lawyer. I mean, he should be jumping on this. I mean, it's a sin.
Well, when it happened the first time, the man you just mentioned who has a voice, the one who sounds like Groucho Marx's grandmother getting a hysterectomy, that one, without anesthesia?
That's him.
The guy who doesn't have a voice for radio, who sounds like a grandmother having a history, he actually said he was glad that they banned me in Britain, and yet people listen to him. I don't understand people anymore. I don't understand it. I can't follow how people who call themselves conservatives could listen to a statement like that and never tune the guy in again.
They're afraid if they mention your name that maybe they'll lose one or two listeners and people start listening to you. That's ridiculous. They should stand on their own merits and support you.
Look, Bernie, I don't know what to say. It's a big world, and there's a lot of audience out there, and people listen to who they want to listen to. It's not about bashing the other guy as much as it is talking about how in the world can an issue like this not be covered by the Associated Press. Let's start with that. Simple idea. Associated Press, they cover virtually every story imaginable. A rapist, a murderer, a pimp, a fingernail, an ant, a chimpanzee, a terrorist. You name it, they cover it. But a member of the American media, albeit a commentator, banned entry to a Western nation is an astoundingly large story with tremendous principles attached to it. How can an entire organization that speaks for the American press not even mention this story? Now, I expect that behavior from the local San Francisco newspapers, which have all failed. I expect that from failed newspapers. But you would think that a wire service would have a scintilla of self-respect left, and they would cover this story. And that is why I have to get up here and trumpet it. Because if I do not speak for myself, who will? On the other hand, if I only speak for myself, who am I? I become just a shrill man screaming, and I'm not going to do this much longer. In fact, in the next hour, we have some female company joining us to talk about her new book. Laura Ingraham will be here, and I know that it'll be a lot of fun. She's a personal friend of mine. She's got a great new book, and I'm going to enjoy that, frankly. We'll see where it goes right here on the Savage Nation. Be here. Oh, I got 38 seconds, 7 seconds, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Savage back in a few minutes.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
America is asking you to call. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, Dinah Shore, when America was a different country, and the chrome was thick and the women were women, I guess. What a country. I'm very much a product of the 1950s, I'll be very honest with you. I'm a throwback in that regard. You know, it's when Eisenhower was running America, a man actually born in America, a war hero, who actually backed the military and feared the military-industrial complex, a man that I trusted as a child. So I must admit that I'm a little bit of a man out of place here in the savage in the once savage nation. We've gone from a savage nation to something else. I don't know what you'd call it today. We're no longer a savage nation. On web commentary, my friend wrote that it's the dying nation. He said, in recent days, the second administration in the UK has denied radio host Michael Savage entry into the country for dubious reasons. And the full story of what happened is amazing in its bold indifference to sanity. Freedom of speech, he writes, takes another torpedo as the once powerful and influential Great Britain relinquishes its spine to blatant censorship and utter weakness. It's amazing. You know, Durham wrote this. This all makes me want to write an open letter beginning with this intro. Dear UK, you become France. How do you like that? Long live the spineless. At any rate, this is yet another elephant in the living room that will yet again be ignored by the American mediocre media. Nothing will be said by other talk show hosts. Savage is not part of the cigar-smoking boys club, and I hope he doesn't want to be. There is a great advantage to being seen as an outsider. It means you can't be bought. As the liberal media and the UK fiddle while they burn, it gives those of us who are independent thinkers pause. It gives us the flare in the night sky that is telling us that our civilization has tumbled into near irrelevance. But it also accomplishes another ideal. It gives those of us who can see the writing on the wall motivation in that we know deep down inside that it will be us who will be around to pick up the pieces. Andrew Durham, thank you, right? Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that. Web commentary, The Savage Nation versus The Dying Nation. So we'll do this for a little bit more, and I'll give you some of the news right now that's up on the website. These are the stories that made it to michaelsavage.com. I'm sorry to say, majority of Americans losing faith in Obama. That's a sad story, because he's a young man. He's a young man. He wasn't given a chance, and it was the white cracker racists in the Tea Party and those nasty Republicans who stood in his way. I mean, if you listen to CNN and the New York Times, if only there was a single-party system, Obama would be very popular. You know, I mean, you know, let's be fair about it. If Obama could only have rounded up all of the opponents of his socialist policies and put them into internment camps, his popularity would be 100%. Just think about that. It's those nasty people, the crackers in the Tea Party, who oppose him. So when you read a majority of Americans losing faith in Obama, you got to take that with a grain of, well, I guess, salt. You got to realize it's because of this nasty, disgusting two-party system that those white racist founding father crackers created. Think about it. That's right. They created a cracker system called a two-party system, by gosh. That's not democracy. True democracy is electing an unknown man with shady money past from Chicago and giving him absolute power with no checks and balances. And then you'll see if this man could perform without these stupid people on the right always putting him down. I mean, he's trying hard. Him and Michelle mean well. So what did she drink champagne and eat caviar in the White House at your expense and has more personal assistance than any first lady in history? That shouldn't matter. She's making up for past iniquities. She's making up for past iniquities in the system, so she's personally enjoying it. That's the important thing. It's not that the sharecropper's grandchild enjoys it somewhere in Mississippi. What's important is that she enjoys it and he enjoys riding around in Air Force One. And these crackers who are putting him down, they're the real problem. If only this wasn't owned by a cracker nation and a cracker press, Obama's ratings would be 90, 100%, maybe 110%, like in Uganda under Idi Amin, where there was no opposition. Or under Fidel Castro, where there was no opposition. That's the problem. The problem is that the country has not yet got that private civilian national security force that Obama talked about during the election, run by his own people, people he can trust, a private national security force just as big, just as powerful, and just as well-funded as the U.S. military. Perhaps peopled by the Black Panthers and the Nation of Islam. Listen to clip 22. And this is the kind of person that Obama needs to put out into the streets to shut up the Tea Party. Listen to clip 22.
So much you miss what you're supposed to get to be able to carry out your mission. Is that right? And so if anybody come in here trying to do something, we'll just shoot back from right here. I told you last night the Tea Party is arming. The white man already been armed. He's just arming even more. I don't even see how we got a discussion or a debate in the black community on whether or not we should be armed. Of course we should be armed mentally, culturally, and spiritually. But if you don't think that we need to be in self-defense, according for those who are watching, to our Second Amendment rights, if you think we should go less than our so-called constitutional rights, you're out of your mind.
See, now that's the kind of intelligence that we need in America. That's the kind of love that we need coming out of America. And I believe that that's what we need is a private national security force that answers only to Obama, who to intimidate anyone who speaks up to Obama. Now, that's something that CNN, ABC, and the others in the media could support. That's something that Thomas Friedman of the New York Times could get up and support. He would sleep better at night if he knew that Malik Shabazz was running the private national security force, because he would say, at last, America is like China, where a few brilliant men are running the country. Without those nasty, recalcitrant, knuckle-dragging Republicans and independents standing in the way of this poor, poor young man who tried to save America. That's what we need, is a private national security force answering only to Obama. And you certainly don't want to cull it from ex-military. What you want to do is perhaps go to the prisons and release some of the worst prisoners in the worst jails, put a uniform on them, and make them into the private national security force, the same way that young Adolf did when he created the SA. Take the worst, most amoral thugs you can find, arm them, give them a uniform, and tell them that they're your private national security force. Then you will see cohesion. Then you will see unity. Then you will see a public health care system that you can be proud of. Then you will see the oil men hanging from rafters. Then you will see an America that we can be proud of. I'm sure that ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN and George Stephanopoulos would be very proud of an America that looked like that. Yeah, you think so? Well, I'm not so sure that I'm wrong either. We are also talking about, despite a new prime minister, Britain's travel ban for Michael Savage continues. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, let's talk about the British Petroleum oil spill for a minute. You know that they changed the name from British Petroleum to BP because it was such a disaster. It seems to me that the refusal of the U.S. government to address the banning of a U.S. citizen, Michael Savage, from England, frankly, was a foreshadowing of its refusal to deal properly with the mess that British Petroleum made in the Gulf of Mexico. Is it directly related? Of course not. Is there a relationship? I don't know. You figure it out. Okay, Rochester, New York. Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Michael. I have a feeling that the conservatives probably told your attorneys the truth last year when they said they were against the list and they wanted to do away with it. But because they did not win the election clean and had to form a coalition with the Lib Dems, they're probably having to concern themselves with keeping them happy in order to keep the government together. And thus,
I agree with you. It's a political coalition that's held together by spit and wire. And that there is no leadership there right now. It's a weak coalition.
Exactly, which leads me to, being a student of history, given that they have not banned your voice or thoughts from being heard, why not ask your attorneys over there to see if they would find a friendly bookseller and take a couple
of... You want to hear the answer to that one? My New York literary agent, which is probably, he's one of the best, he sold my next book, which is coming out in October, from one of America's most prestigious publishers, HarperCollins. Do you know that he tried to place Banned in Britain with 7 British publishers? Many of them were interested, but when they went to their board of directors, every one of them was turned down. Do you know that?
You learn something new every day. What about a bookseller directly?
Nah, I'm not into selling. You know, if they don't want to take it, I don't fight at a certain point. There's certain things I just don't pursue. You know, I'm going to send you a free copy of Banned in Britain. Thank you very much. New York City, WOR. Mike, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike, big fan of the show. I also subscribe to your podcast. I wanted to mention, and I'm surprised that you didn't notice this earlier, but the Associated Press is actually owned by none other than N.M. Rothschild & Sons Limited under one of their many subsidiaries. So,
You mean it's owned by a British holding company? The AP is owned by a British holding company?
Well, N.M. Rothschild and Sons, yes. The highest at the top of the Illuminati, if you will, quote unquote. So it's all tied together. So it's no surprise to me. I'm surprised that you didn't know that, but I can show you a link. I can send it to you.
No, I trust you. Well, I'll tell you what I uncovered about 2 years ago. You know when you see polls that say AP Ipsos? Nobody asks who Ipsos is, I-P-S-O-S. Mm-hmm. It's a European-owned polling firm, if you can believe it. Running false polls here in the United States of America.
Yeah.
So what are we, a wholly owned subsidiary of some nefarious foreign capital? Is that what we become?
Well, the thing is, and rather than just keeping an eye on the ball between left and right, I mean, the whole objective behind all this is nothing more than the biggest heist, as you know, has become the fleecing of America to offshore bankers. That's, you know, the front of the bank, like JP Morgan Chase, Deutsche Bank, all these, they're nothing more than front end to the major behind the scenes Soros holding, like offshore banks.
But didn't they put Obama in power? Didn't these bankers, in your opinion, engineer his election?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so you have to ask yourself, why did they want Obama in power? That's the number one question is, why is Obama the president that George Soros personally wanted to be president? Why?
Well, I mean, you know, it's an obvious question. I mean, you're looking at, you know, the social, development of creating socialism in the United States.
And all right, so now the next question for the audience is, why would a billionaire 10 times over want socialism in the United States? Why is it to the advantage of George Soros and the others to have a pure socialist government in the U.S.? How many times do I have to say to people, the answer is because they have absolute power and the people become peons, peasants all over again? That's the answer. They don't want checks and balances. They don't want a balance of power. They want total power. Power. Hey, I will quote a British genius, Lord Acton, who said, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Now, if that doesn't typify what we're living through today, I'd like to know what does. Correct? You agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's because absolute power corrupts absolutely, and we have none. We have absolutely no power in this country. We have the illusion of power because we have freedom of speech, which is what keeps the masses in line, by the way. Do you know that?
Yeah. Believe me. I mean, most Americans are, for the most part, disenchanted. You know, they don't really see the real news. They're all, you know, they're only obsessed with Paris Hilton and reality TV shows. It's nothing more than a smokescreen.
Yep. Well, they keep them occupied with guns and hoes. Rosas, thanks for the call. Now, we got to play Michelle Obama's speech before the NAACP where she frightens me with her demagoguery. Where here is a woman drinking champagne and eating the finest of foods, flying on Air Force One, who is talking as though she is suffering some kind of oppression in the United States of America. Listen to clips 26 and 27.
When so many of our children still, and a black child is still far more likely to go to prison than a white child, I think the founders of this organization would agree that our work is not yet done. When African-American communities are still hit harder than just about anywhere by this economic downturn, and so many families are just barely scraping by, I think the founders would tell us that now is not the time to rest on our laurels. When stubborn inequalities still persist in education and health, in income and wealth, I think those founders would urge us to increase our intensity and to increase our discipline and our focus and keep fighting for a better future for our children and our grandchildren.
So here is the First Lady of the United States of America, Michelle Obama, who is talking about stubborn inequalities. I mean, how much higher does she have to go for her to finally say, thank God I have arrived in the promised land? How far does she have to go, her and her husband, to say, wait a minute, this nonsense has got to come to an end? We were supposed to be unifiers. I'm not gonna resort to that kind of demagoguery. But no, she is resorting to that kind of demagoguery. She's saying that there's an inconsistency and inequality in income and wealth. And she's now talking about our founders when she said that she was proud to be an American for the first time in her life when her and her husband became the first couple. No, ladies and gentlemen, there's an awful lot of work for you to do. Very dangerous times we're living in, and you've only seen the beginning. Believe me, you've only seen the beginning. They have not yet begun to do their dirty tricks. That's what I'm waiting to see, what the dirty tricks will be. Truthfully, I don't know when the dirty tricks are going to come, but they're going to come very soon. Now, some would argue that Michael Savage being banned in Britain was one of the dirty tricks of the government here in the United States of America. Coming up next is a little change of topic. In a way, not really, is it? Laura Ingraham will be on with her new book, The Obama Diaries, and we're going to have a lot of fun right here on the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're certainly talking about this travesty in England. We talked about Michelle Obama with her astounding speech that U.S. suffers from a stubborn inequality. Income and wealth. She's the First Lady of America, and she's still acting like she's an oppressed minority. Joining us now is number one New York Times bestselling author and the most listened to woman in political talk radio, my good friend Laura Ingraham, with her new book, The Obama Diaries. Laura, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, how are you? I love being on a show hosted by a man who's banned by all the right people. So I'm feeling very good and very positive to be in the company of the banned Savage.
Well, Laura, you said on your show this morning you were talking about the ban, and we're going to talk about your book, but just a quick question to you. Do you fear similar restrictions either in the form of an England-style travel ban or in the form of the Fairness Doctrine here in America?
I think that given the desperation we're seeing from the left, that anything, Michael, is possible. I mean, the fact that you, as an American citizen who has been convicted of no crimes, who has been accused of no crimes, is now not allowed to travel to Britain because of your views, when that can happen, I'm telling you, anything can happen. And it is shocking, frankly, that more people who claim to be for free speech haven't talked about this. And it's shocking that more people aren't just completely up in arms about an absolute clampdown on the First Amendment and the freedom of association and speech, which is all wrapped up in this ban. And
now, let's talk. I don't want you to waste your time talking about me. I can take care of myself, lady. I want to talk about your book. Right now, it's number 6 on Amazon. I want it to be number 1 by the time you're off the air. So let's talk about the premise of your book, The Obama Diaries. Let me start with Michelle Obama's frightening speech yesterday before the NAACP, where she says the U.S. still suffers from a stubborn inequality. Can you believe that, Laura?
Well, Michelle Obama, as it's revealed in these diaries that I got possession of, okay? I don't know how, but I got possession of these diaries, okay? Now they're the American public's possession. People have to read them and decide for themselves. But in the diaries that I have, absolutely echoes the sentiments that she raised yesterday in that NAACP speech, Michael. I mean, this woman tried to rebrand herself. Desiree Rogers tried to help her rebrand herself to the mom in chief from that first time I'm proud to be an American comment, right? She had to rebrand.
Yes.
So she went into rebranding mode. She started the garden and the kids in the garden and planting the seedlings in the garden. But guess what? In the end, she's still the same old Michelle Obama, radical from the 1980s, who has a chip on her shoulder and a sense of entitlement that I think is beginning to wear on people and irritate people, especially in an economic downturn. I mean, that woman did such a quick drop-by in Panama City. I mean, the only thing that I guess the locals got that visit, she went to this Pink Pelican ice cream bar, Michael, and I kid you not, this is not a fiction, I kid you not, she ordered a chocolate hurricane ice cream cone. I mean, if you're going to the Gulf Coast,
yeah, that's not quite the right thing. But what is she doing when she goes to the NAACP? Why is she trying to stir them up? Is because the Democrats are in such trouble, they're trying to stir their base up? Is that obviously what this is all about?
100%. What Michelle is doing is acting as a political agent dressed in couture, okay? She's a political agent. She always has been. The idea that she was going to be some, you know, let's help the girls with their homework, have the romantic strolls with Barack and play with Bo the dog, that's not what Michelle Obama is. Michelle Obama has and always has wanted to be in politics. And I believe this is setting the groundwork for her political future. I believe she is probably annoyed, as we've seen in these diaries, in the Obama diaries.
Well, you don't think that Michelle's going to take Blago's position as governor, do you?
I think Michelle could follow in the footsteps of Hillary Clinton and run for the Senate in Illinois. Absolutely. 100%.
Now, in your book, Laura Ingraham, in your book, The Obama Diaries, you speak about the Obama razzle dazzle. What exactly is that?
Dazzle is basically their way of creating a theater of diversion. And it's using the media as their, of course, their cover and their celebrity status to create this spectacle. You know, the sparkly dust, like when you're a kid, you throw up that sparkle dust and it kind of coats everything and everything looks beautiful for a moment. That's what the razzle-dazzle is. So I talk about all these things that they've done. In Michelle's grand garden rollout, where she had cabinet secretaries traveling with her to Philadelphia to talk about the food deserts that are plaguing our country where people apparently can't get food. I've never heard about that, but apparently that's a big problem. Where we talk about Bo the dog, the rollout of Bo the dog, like it's the Normandy invasion, okay?
Wait a minute. Hold it. Now, I have to tell you, I think that my dog, Teddy Savage, is probably more famous than their dog. Why do all these people get dogs and then no one ever sees them again? What, do they give them away after Christmas? Tell us about, you know, one thing that bothers me a little bit is the cover-up inside the White House. Isn't it odd that a first grandmother lives there?
Well, the first grandmother lives there, but I haven't happened to think that she, if you give her some sodium pentothal, Michael, I have a feeling that a lot of common sense would come out of that woman's mouth. Because remember, she was given one opportunity to speak to the press, and then they shut her down. And
what did she say? What did the first grandmother, Marian Robinson, say?
Said that basically she said she was annoyed that Michelle was on this health food kick with the kids, and that
oh my God, she didn't say that.
And she said, look, when if kids want something to eat, you know, give them something to eat. I think she actually said, if kids want fried chicken, give them fried chicken. Like, not a big deal. And,
right.
And so she kind of seems like kind of a regular person. And
so she's actually a threat. You know, this morning I was bicycling and I see a mother feeding two little white boys their breakfast, and they're eating a fruit salad and a croissant. And I said, the boys in America, the white boys in particular, talk about food, are being fed a diet so inadequate for their needs that I wouldn't be surprised if boys like that, the white boys of the American suburbs, were not to lactate at age 13. I've never seen anything like this. They're raising a nation of lactating boys with these diets.
I love the fact, Michael, that she goes to the NAACP yesterday, and we have cities crumbling, we have school systems crumbling, we have families in complete chaos and disarray all over America, but especially in the black community. She talks about this. Well, I want to say that, as I've told my children, dessert is not a right. Dessert!
But what does that mean? What does that mean? Meaning that if you have dessert, it's decadent?
No, but then she has her chocolate hurricane down at the Pink Pelican, down a couple hours later in the Gulf Coast. So it's
just... Laura, the Obama Diaries is a satire, correct?
Well, people call it a satire, Michael, but this is my response to that. This is what I say. Yeah, there's some mocking in this book for sure, but he, every day, as you have cataloged on the Savage Nation, brilliantly, I might add, he mocks the U.S. Constitution and, frankly, the American people. He disregards them. He dismisses them. In this book, I think people will find more truth. This is not salesmanship. This is the truth. You will find more truth and more insights in this book than you will in any Robert Gibbs press conference, in any spectacular razzle-dazzle orchestrated with Steven Spielberg and George Clooney and Beyonce and Shakira and the rest of the starlets who seem to basically have an office in the West Wing these days. You'll find more truth in those pages than you will in any of the things that they're trying to pull over the American people. So that's my answer to that. People can decide for themselves if it's satire or if it's real.
These diaries, you say, were a firsthand account of the Obama presidency as it happened, in the words of those who shaped it. I understand what you're trying to do here. But you are, Laura, living in Washington, D.C., and you really do, come on, you circulate with the in crowd, don't you? I mean, they like you.
I don't really, well, they like me? Well, if anyone liked me, they probably won't like me after this book. I mean, look, I...
Oh, so you're going to be welcome to my club. You might be banned in Washington after this.
Believe me, Michael, I wish sometimes that I had a social life, but I have two little kids, you know, 5 and 2, so I don't really have much of a social life to speak of. And you know something? I have my dog, Lucy, and I have two beautiful kids, and I have great friends and great family, and that's kind of good enough for me. Occasionally I'll go out, but not a...
But
not
you have colleagues in the talk radio business like myself. Now, you accuse the president of being something everyone thinks he is, which is a narcissist. But, Laura, let's be clear, one person to the other. Isn't everybody in politics somewhat of a narcissist?
I think you're on to something. Of course, we all in entertainment, we all have some narcissistic
tendencies.
That's
right. In other words, we have it, too. We're talk show hosts. We're slightly narcissistic. So why is his narcissism so grating is the question. Is that he's a bad actor?
Right. Well, no.
Is it that he leans his head back and looks down like Mussolini at everybody? Is that what gets to you?
On the 4th of July, Michael, when he was in that Hugo Chavez-like short-sleeve shirt on the White House balcony. I've never seen anything like it. On the White House balcony, like, we're his subjects. And he's looking
Was he throwing roses down to the masses?
It was reminiscent of one of the old favorite Eva Perón.
He didn't
things.
Sprinkle roses down to the soy-eating, lactating young boys or anything of that nature, no?
No, Michael, you have to get this straight. Michelle was dropping organic yams from the White House balcony.
Oh, come on. Now you're making this up. That's not in your book, is it?
No. What we do know, Michael, is that there is hilarity. And I think the reason, one of the main reasons that
Oh, wait, she dropped organic yams from the White House balcony onto children. That might be considered a hate crime, number one, but think of all the shyster lawyers who could start suing on behalf of the poor children hit by the sweet potatoes.
She's just doling out the abundant produce that is ever forever coming from this garden. I mean, the Garden of Eden didn't produce as much fruit and vegetables as this garden. I mean, give me a break.
Oh, you're saying the White House garden, they're actually bringing it in from somewhere else to make believe she grew it some Liberty garden?
Video of the National Park Service packing up trucks into the White House and planting seedlings into the White House garden. That video, it's fully grown vegetables, okay? That video is on the World Wide Web. Everyone can see it. And guess what? Marian Robinson, Michelle's mother, that salty first grandmother, she writes about it in her diary. One night she wandered outside in her bathrobe. She heard this beep, 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 beep sound outside. She wanders out. She goes, what in the hell? She looks out. She sees the Park Service people planting these sweet potatoes the size of basketballs, okay? These things were huge. And so she's on to them. She's on to that game.
So, Laura, your book, The Obama Diaries, came out today. I'm the first radio show you've been on, I assume, this one, The Savage Date?
You are, the 100%.
Now, look, your book was number 6 on Amazon at the beginning of this show. I hope it's number 1 by the time this interview is over.
Well, I think that people have been desperate to really deeply satirize, mock, and ridicule the Obamas, but also with some flair and some humor. I mean, you do that on a daily basis in a number of ways on your show every day. In print, it's also fun to do, and it's fun to read. It's the summertime. People, I think, need to have a laugh, and they need to get energized and pumped about taking this country back. So it kind of does all of that. It's the horror and the hilarity of the Obamas all wrapped into one. So I think there's...
Laura Ingraham, I want to ask you a personally difficult question. Are you going to be invited on many other radio shows, do you think? Or are you sort of persona non grata from the so-called conservative media as well for reasons I don't understand?
Invited on some shows, and you know, look, it's the media is a funny place, right? I mean, everybody has their little fiefdoms, and I understand that. And here's my philosophy, this is all I can tell you, is that I like to take care of my friends, and friendship to me is so important. And if you do right by me, I do right by you. And I think all, you know, we all want to save this country, right? We all want to rescue this country.
All I can say is you better have me on your damn show when my book comes out in October, or I'm not going to be your friend.
I tried to get you on my show, the last book that came out, and all I got was...
Laura, I tend to go into my own shell when things go bad. What I do is I withdraw and I say thank you, but I can't even talk sometimes except on the show. I know you did. You really did extend yourself. I really told you, remember when we met last April in that secret location, Area 51? I said that I can't wait for the day your book comes out, and don't worry about it. It's going to be a bestseller. Laura Ingraham, The Obama Diaries, From My Mouth to God's Ears, should be number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list for many months to come until my book comes out in October, and then I'm afraid it's going to have to go to number 2.
Michael, they're obsessed with you, the Obamas, so you're prominently mentioned. I mean,
what do you mean they're obsessed with me? They really mentioned me in your book?
They attack you in the most typical, stereotypical, mundane, idiotic manner, which is just what you'd think liberals do. They blast you, they blast me, they blast others, but they're especially obsessed with you because of all your, you know, your advanced degrees and your training, and you're just different from everybody else. They're obsessed with you. That's all I'm going to say, and I don't really want to say any more. That's actually upsetting to me.
Laura, my mother always said I was different. I never knew what she meant, but I think I'm starting to understand. The Obama Diaries, Laura Ingraham, in bookstores everywhere or on Amazon. I wish you the best, Laura. Thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Karen, I hope I get banned like you.
God bless the babies. The time is, it's time for a quick break, and I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The issue is that in America, the First Amendment was written to protect offensive speech. We don't need a First Amendment to protect polite speech, do we? I mean, everyone engages in polite speech. What do we need protections for? It's speech which provokes thought that is considered offensive and hateful by those who disagree with you, isn't it? And so, therefore, it's only speech we're talking about, not the acts of murderers. And to lump me in with murderers is defaming me. It's libeling me.
Yeah, well, that's what I said last year, and it still holds to be true. Now, we read today that two people in Venezuela are facing up to 11 years in prison for twittering. And yet, the psychotic Sean Penn and other actors have said that Chavez is not a dictator. That psycho, Sean Penn, two winners. Twice he won the stupid Academy Awards, which to me is an award to Sodom and Gomorrah. Twice he wins an Academy Award for playing PC parts. And this psycho, Sean Penn, comes back and says, oh no, it's not a dictatorship in Venezuela. And here's two people in Venezuela facing up to 11 years in prison for twittering. Do you have any idea the danger we are in when we have enemies within like this? Going around lying about Chavez. You've got Oliver Stone, another psycho babbler, saying that Chavez is not a dictator. You've got him going around saying Fidel Castro was not a mass murderer. Che Guevara was a hero. Do you have any idea the danger we are in? But that is why we have the kind of political system that we have. Montana, Daniel, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to express that I listen to you every time I go home to work and from work, and I listen to every time I get up in the morning and drive to work, and that was one of the best interviews I've ever heard on your show. I really appreciate it.
So you listen to Laura Ingraham in the morning and Michael Savage in the early evening, huh?
That's right. Going to work and then leaving work every day.
No, she and I sounded good together. Maybe we could also do a separate show, a midnight show, and never sleep again. It's like the Burns and Allen show, she and I just talking away about politics. It actually was a lot of fun, truthfully. I don't do very well with people when I have a crosstalk. It's usually very hard for a talk show host to have a guest. It's not easy. No, it's the kind of business where it's basically a monologue and callers. But she and I surprisingly got along. You know why? Because she let me talk and she listened. She knows how to follow. The fact is that it was a good dance. In other words, that's all there is to it. Biri and ba-boom, ba-ba. All right, so that's the story. As I say, look, you want to go to michaelsavage.com and check out the book and the petition and the donation and you got the freedom shoes and the freedom mat. I don't have that stuff for you. You know, I'm not offering an online university of freedom, whatever. Whatever you want to do is fine. You know, I'll live with this or I won't live with it. Whatever God gives me on earth, I'll have. I don't know. The British don't control my destiny. And I got to say to you again, I'm not playing the martyr and I'm not playing the hero. I hope I don't come across that way. Sometimes maybe it starts to border on that because of this. It won't go on for very long. I'll go back to my normal self. But look, it is another body blow. I had hoped for over a year. I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, mainly your donations, by the way, to the Savage Legal Fund. And it hasn't worked. We were promised that it would be a list that they throw out. And guess what? Gasp. A politician lied to us. I'm shocked. And so beware the Ides of November, because the Republicans are promising you that they're going to be different than the Dems. Oh, yeah. They're going to bring back what? Bush 2? Oh, okay. That should be great.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Jackie Smith has said that the reason you were banned is because the things that you say foment hatred, engaging people in spreading hatred as well. What do you say to the reasons behind the ban?
Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. There are millions of people who agree with me, not only in America but around the world. Now, you can take sound bites from an individual and turn them into anything you want. But if you actually listen to what I said about these things, it might be a different individual that you're hearing. I don't know which show Jackie heard or when she heard it, but I'm not broadcast in England. So obviously she was given some selected sound bites by individuals who detest my points of view and are trying to skewer me. That's not freedom of speech, nor is that fair.
England's new Jim Crow law, leftists only, Michael Savage need not apply. Now, what am I talking about? Well, despite a new prime minister, Britain's travel ban for Michael Savage continues. You wouldn't know it because the news has banned me as well. That's right. Britain bans Michael Savage, again welcomes Che Guevara's daughter. The Savage Nation versus the Dying Nation. These are some of the great articles that have been written by some, I think, fine journalists. General Franco says Umberto Fontova is still dead. And after a year of legal wrangling, popular radio host Michael Savage is still banned in Britain. The new conservative British government of Prime Minister David Cameron is sticking by former Labour Home Secretary Jackie Smith's decision from May of last year. You hear this? The new British government informs Savage that his exclusion stands because of the absence of clear, convincing, and public evidence that he has repudiated his previous statements. Instead of the false contrition, groveling, and confessions that Stalin, Mao, and Che Guevara demanded from the subjects they accused of thought crimes before murdering them, Michael Savage sought to repudiate his listing alongside terrorists and Nazis by resorting to the tenets of Western jurisprudence and presenting evidence to the contrary. In today's Britain, what's left of the Magna Carta only works in favor of actual Islamic terrorists. You see, 1 month after insulting and banning Michael Savage last summer, Britain opened her arms to Che Guevara's daughter, Alida. The occasion was a celebration in London entitled Cuba 50, billed as the biggest European celebration in the 50th anniversary year of the Cuban Revolution. Can you believe this? They commemorated 50 years of Castro's Stalinist regime, which jailed political prisoners at a higher rate than Stalin's, murdered political prisoners at a higher rate than pre-war Hitler's, and came closest of anyone to plunging the world into nuclear war. Che Guevara's daughter was there to promote, in her own words, my father's ideals, his concerns, and his ambitions. I believe that my father is a banner to the world. If we could only follow his example, the world would be a much more beautiful place, said the witch. Well, let's have a look at Alida's father's ambitions, Che Guevara, keeping in mind that what got Michael Savage banned was his purported fostering of extremist views in his so-called hate speech. Listen to what Ernesto Che Guevara said in his 1966 message to the Tricontinental Conference in Havana. Quote, hatred as the central element of our struggle. Hatred that is intransigent. Hatred so violent that it propels a human being beyond his natural limitations, making him violent and cold-blooded killing machine. We reject any peaceful approach. Violence is inevitable. To establish socialism, rivers of blood must flow. The imperialist enemy must feel like a hunted animal wherever he moves. Thus we'll destroy him. These hyenas, meaning Americans, are fit only for extermination. We must keep our hatred alive and fan it to paroxysm. The victory of socialism is well worth millions of atomic victims. Now, those are the words of Che Guevara, the man glorified by the American left and the media. Yet, no rational person would require much elasticity of definition to classify Alida's father, Che Guevara, as hate. And yet, she was invited to England, and during the visit, she boasted of her fervent fostering of her father's views. She said, "I want to be like Che and fight until final victory. Then you feel elated. It is preferable to sink in the sea than to betray the glory that once lived," she said in England. That's the story, ladies and gentlemen. That's the story. They bashed in the brains of freedom. I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. I am a talk show host. Sitting at my desk is a paperweight by Weems and Plath. I shouldn't have given the name. What the hell? Why'd I give him a free plug? And it's a wonderful one. I have one that's a compass. Now I got a bunch. This one is a thermometer. You know, I'm obsessed with temperature. Wherever I am, I like to know the exact temperature within a 2-degree spread. This started, by the way, this phobia about temperature long before Al Gore was born. I had a thing about temperature. I'm within a certain frame. It's like a certain plant will thrive by the seashore, but you move it inland 100 yards, doesn't do well, or it can't grow at all. I'm that kind of plant. I'm very sensitive to temperature. I like around 65 to 68. Any higher than that, it's already schwitz time, Yankee Stadium, July 4th, bandana on the neck, I want to go home, I got a suntan and my eyes hurt, and the hot dog and the glove, nothing works, I want to go, Joe DiMaggio, goodbye. If it is below a certain temperature, well, it doesn't, low temperatures don't bother me. I think there's a bit of the Inuit in me. How, I don't know, I can't piece this together. Genetically, I could probably figure this one out, but there's something about ice cold that I like, and that I don't like about heat. I think humans can survive more in the in lower than in higher, right, Al Gore? Because he's got that backwards. He's a little dyslexic. See, Gore was right about something, but he was wrong about global warming. He knew that there was a cataclysm coming, but he had it completely backwards, as usual. It's not a global warming that's coming. It's global cooling, according to all estimates, which occurred between about the 13th century and the 19th century. Global cooling gave a little hit. And half of Europe went into starvation, and the wars occurred as a result of global cooling. So Gore knew something was coming. The only thing is he got it wrong, and he panicked everybody. And, you know, you smear off enough fake scientists, you could prove anything in the world today. I'll be right back.
Savage.
While England bans the Taliban bombs, Afghanistan has been Barack Obama's inconsistent folly, and his mishandling of the war there has caused very little headway and a lot of confusion. Coming on the show to speak about Obama's strategy in Afghanistan is Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Alan, you've got the war going longer than Obama promised, and his top general, General McChrystal, being fired and replaced. What do you think this is all about?
Well, thanks so much for having me on. I think that when you look at the situation with General McChrystal and the Afghanistan situation, I think that we did not look at it from a long-term perspective. I think we had an emotional knee-jerk reaction. There are many different ways that you could have handled the McChrystal situation. It could have been a verbal reprimand. It could have been written letters of reprimand for his staff officers. But the most important thing is that we have a victory in Afghanistan. We have a strategy that enables us to have a victory. I think that the problem in Afghanistan is we have gotten away from being focused on the enemy, more so focused on nation building, and without a doubt, the insidious rules of engagement that we have placed on our soldiers, which is very restrictive in nature, is allowing the enemy to have the initiative. And I think that first and foremost, you're going to have to change the rules of engagement so that we can properly engage this enemy. When we went into Afghanistan back some 9 years ago in 2001, the goal was to deny the enemy a sanctuary. And here we are, coming on 10 years later, we still have an enemy, being that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, that is continually trying to have a base of operations there. So I think that instead of worrying about establishing a government, and, you know, I have my own thoughts about Karzai, but instead of worrying about establishing government and infrastructure and all these things, it's got to be a secure area. You're dealing with people in that part of the world that understand strength and might, and they will come around to supporting you if they know that you're committed to defeating the enemy that's there.
So McChrystal talked to the rock and roll rag Rolling Stone. How in the world has this junkie magazine become so relevant?
Yeah, I think that's one of the critical questions we have to look at. And, you know, I really don't care for the whole embedded media thing. And I think that whoever the press secretary or whoever handles the public affairs for General McChrystal at the time should have been a little bit more circumspect. But then also, you got to understand that these individuals get clearance that come from the Pentagon. So obviously, the Pentagon should have been a lot more circumspect about what was going on. And you know, you have to be careful with the media in the combat zones. One thing that I always told my subordinate leaders and soldiers was that everything that you say is on the record. And even if they say, you know, let's relax and just chit chat, chances are they probably have a recorder still going on in their pocket. So, and I saw some commanders that were putting some very interesting trick bags when all of a sudden they read things that were written back in papers when we were in Afghanistan and Iraq in 2003. So you have to be very savvy with dealing with the media. And obviously, when you understand this gentleman, I believe Hastings, his background, he was not someone who's going to be very appreciative or very kind to the military in his writing. So I think that that's the big lesson learned now is who are we giving access to our soldiers and to our leaders in these combat zones.
The replacement is General Petraeus. Do you think he is the right choice?
Well, in choosing General Petraeus, what President Obama has done is put himself in an untenable position because, as Senator Obama, this is the gentleman that he was chastising and ridiculing and attacking, along with his co-pink far-left individuals back when Petraeus was promoting the Iraq surge. And now, all of a sudden, he's turned to this same general who was very successful in Iraq and said, I need you to save me. So now it is to the point where General Petraeus is now the third general under this president. He sacked McKiernan. He has now sacked McChrystal. Now, if he does not give this General Petraeus, who is a proven successful theater commander, what he wants and the resources, then it comes back on the president, and it comes back on the ambassador. It comes back on this administration as truly being the ones who are probably behind the failures that we're seeing there. So I think that in not being a long-term strategist and being a short-term, thin-skinned type of individual, he made a very interesting decision. And being a good general, General Petraeus has landed there. He's got to assess the situation. He's got to look at the staff. He's got to come back and say, this is what I'm going to need. And I don't think this June of 2011 deadline is going to be something that you have to stick to. This is now a moving target.
We have on the air Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joining us. Alan, what should the United States' strategy be at this point?
Well, you know, what I want to see happening next is that the very first thing is we get refocused on the enemy. We get truly focused on denying him sanctuary, cutting off his resources, being men, materiel, whatever type of logistical support that he's getting. We've got to interdict the flow of those resources and those fighters coming across the border, being from Pakistan or from the north out of Tajikistan or Kyrgyzstan or what have you. I think that we've got to go back and look at those rules of engagement and make the rules of engagement amenable for our soldiers and not to set up the success of the enemy. I think one of the heinous things about the ROE is that if our soldiers encounter someone that they know was firing with them, if they drop their weapon, they're allowed to walk away. They're not allowed to, fire until fired upon. So it's just those little simple things that have to be reviewed and they have to be changed so that we can send the message to the enemy and also to the people there in Afghanistan and the coalition forces we're working with, to include the Afghan army, that we're very serious about taking a fight to the Taliban.
Okay, so what? The strategy is to let the soldiers do their job. So there you have it, Alan. Are they going to be allowed to do their jobs?
I think that this president that we have in this administration, much the same as with Lyndon Johnson in Vietnam, is more so focused on a domestic liberal progressive agenda rather than a foreign policy and definitely a combat or war policy and strategy. So I think that they've just given General Petraeus the ball and just told him to go and do whatever you want. But I think that they now have to realize that they're responsible. They're on the hook because they have removed a second general now. So I don't know if it is possible for this administration. I don't know if it's possible for this president, whose most important title is commander-in-chief, if he is up to the task of doing that. I mean, we just saw that he was not up to the task of securing our borders when he said that it's too vast, it's too hard, and there's nothing we can do about it. He is not an American president. He is more so sounding like an American coward. And we know that Americans don't too much appreciate cowards.
Colonel Alan West, you're running for Congress in Florida. How is the campaign coming along?
Our race is going absolutely fantastic, and we are already starting to see the indicators of a very scared and concerned incumbent. Some of the attack pieces he's coming out with, in other words, he was trying to say that I'm raising money that's coming from people that want to ruin our beaches and that support BP, when he is the one who has been taking money from BP, and he is the one who has a former chief of staff that now works for BP. He's doing the typical liberal attack dog character assassination tactics, which we don't care about because we're focusing on the issues. We're raising money very well. Our name is getting out, not just here in the Congressional District 22, but across the nation. And I think that the people are looking for principled leadership that will go and stand against the Nancy Pelosi agenda. You know, I don't believe, as Nancy Pelosi said a couple of days ago, that unemployment checks are the way that you create jobs.
Nah, that's just a liberal canard. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, thank you for being on the Savage Nation.
Well, Dr. Savage, I really appreciate you having me on, and I hope that you and everyone had a very nice 4th of July, and we must realize that the election that comes up in about 4 months from now will determine what the 4th of July looks like in 2011, our 235th.
Good luck to you, Colonel West. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
God save the Queen! Is there anything that you have said or any of your views that you think might provoke people into violence?
Let me clear the record on that. Jackie Smith's homepage on the Home Secretary's page states my words have led to violence, which is a total fabrication. None of my words have ever led to violence for the simple reason that I don't call for violence. I don't provoke violence. And moreover, I want to say that provoking violence is illegal in the United States as well. How in the world could she allege that my words have caused violence while I'm still on the air all these 15 years?
Now, if that's not enough for you today on the Savage Nation, you must go to michaelsavage.com. So despite a new prime minister, Britain's travel ban for Michael Savage continues, placing me on a travel ban list with known terrorists and neo-Nazis by then British Home Secretary Jackie Smith in May of 2009. I'm still persona non grata across the pond. This is unbelievable to me. Look, I could take it many different ways. A black colleague of mine and I were talking about my being banned by the UK once again. And by the way, go to michaelsavage.com and check out a copy of Banned in Britain. Even the so-called conservative regime is refusing to undo the damage done to my name and reputation, let alone my personal safety. But anyway, my black friend said to me, you know, Michael, you're being treated by the British the way blacks were treated by southern white bigots in the 40s and 50s in the South. I was stunned by his observation, and I said, yes, there's a great deal of truth in what you say. You see, in the South before the 1960s, black people in the South were routinely convicted of crimes without a fair trial. I, Michael Savage, have been tried and convicted of a crime by the British government without the benefit of any trial. I was unable to defend myself. In the Jim Crow era, racists in the South made sure that blacks had separate and inferior accommodations on trains, buses, and in hotels. In the England of today, I have been denied any accommodation whatsoever. In the South of the pre-civil rights era, even drinking fountains had signs in them that said whites only. Well, today there's a sign in England that says leftists only. Michael Savage need not apply. But why did England pick on me? England selected me for discrimination because I'm not a Muslim. They attack me because I'm a conservative. They attack me because I stand for national sovereignty and national identity in a world where they want to dissolve those elements. And they attack me because they want to appease their own guilty consciences with regard to their inherent racism and anti-nationalism. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in the Gulf, and what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. I see in the Hamptons they're renting out their houses as a bed and breakfast now. It's an interesting story. Who would have advertised that? Rosalind Cardesino has a 12,000-square-foot East Hampton villa that she and her husband built. They built it 5 years ago, blah, 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 66-foot heated indoor pool, blah, blah, blah. Since March, the couple has been renting out two of their four bedrooms for $295 to $695 a night. And they make up the beds, and then they cook breakfast for them. Could you ever do that? I could never do that. I'm going to invite strangers in my house? I can't sleep with their family members in my house. The Cardesinos aren't the only Hamptonites who've decided to open their homes to paying guests due to tough financial times. Why would you want to be seen like that as a loser? It means that you never could afford it to begin with. So what'd you build it for? To show off that you're a rich man, you schmuck? You're an artist. You should be downtown somewhere in a junker in Williamsburg. You never belonged in the East Hamptons. You couldn't afford it. You had to build it to show everybody you were a big shot, a big gee. Built the house 12,000 square feet. Now he's on his behind. He has to rent out rooms. Look what they say. We even invite guests to watch us work in the art studio. Oh, how exciting. To watch two old artists smear garbage on a piece of canvas. And we've actually sold some of our work to guests that way. Yeah. Here's another one, Melstein. Stephanie Melstein. Since 08, Melstein has rented out two rooms year-round in the gray shingled house she bought 11 years ago. She sometimes sleeps in the unfinished basement to accommodate guests, spending between $275 and $475 a night. I don't like the whole bed and breakfast thing to begin with. Ooh, it's too close for me. Very claustrophobic. And then you have to eat the food that they make. Ugh, disgusting. Unsanitary at any speed. Speaking of unsanitary, there's a great article about the lunacy of the liberal mindset, exemplified in an even more dramatic way today with a shopping bag. You know how the loony birds on the left like recycled shopping bags? You've seen them in the markets, haven't you? Well, no, we don't use paper or plastic. We recycle. We bring in our own bag. We use it over and over again. You know the type. 60 years old, still wearing jeans, still thinks she's in high school, still listening to Paul McCartney. Planet-saving shopper. She brings in a reusable bag, right? It's reusable. Yeah, I'm from the environment. Upper West Side environmentalist. Well, what they don't know is that these natural bags are full of bacteria. They're not self-cleaning, you see. Gertie, the bags are not self-cleaning. You would have been better off with a paper bag or a plastic bag, idiot. University did a research, and guess what? They're filled with everything imaginable, including E. coli. And particularly, by the way, if you put meat and vegetables in the same reusable bag, you're contaminating the vegetables, idiots. The researchers tested 84 of the bags for bacteria. Talk about bag ladies. They found whopping amounts in all but one bag and coliform bacteria in half of the bags. And yes, the much feared E. coli was among them in 12% of the reusable shopping bags. I realize that this is going to shock many of you because you're saving the planet. You want to ban single-use plastic bags? You want to ban paper bags? Well, you ought to be aware of the fact that the bags you're carrying, all of you bag ladies on the Upper West Side of Manhattan and in the other denizens of stupidity, you're actually contaminating the food that you're carrying in it. I guess you thought that the bag cleaned itself. Or would you think the bacteria are natural, like the dope you smoke? I'll take a call now on the Savage Nation. Here's Albany, New York. RJ, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you for taking my call. Ask my question, hang up, and listen to your answer. The question I have is, why are so many conservatives opposed to the concept of world government?
That is a very fair question. I would hope you'd stay on the line because I think I have an answer for you.
and I will stay on the line.
All right. Let's start with two simple things. The Bill of Rights and the U.S. Constitution. Does that work for you?
Please elaborate.
Well, I mean, isn't that enough of an answer? I can certainly elaborate in a whole book, but a world government would not give us the rights that we have here in the United States of America. We in the United States of America enjoy freedoms that they don't enjoy in the European Union. You know that.
Correct. Is there not a way that the freedoms granted to us through our Constitution would not be adapted globally?
Why would they be adapted globally when you have such monsters trying to create a world government, people who don't even believe in personal freedoms? I mean, I'm going to read for you the names of some of the people at the Bilderberg Group. Some of them are probably respectable in the sense that you probably would not fear them. Let's start with one of them. Let's start with Henry Kissinger. Do you think that he has the best interests of humanity at heart?
Henry Kissinger is perhaps one of the greatest proponents of a free humanity.
Are you kidding me? The man has capitalized on trade with China. He is probably single-handedly responsible for the demise of our manufacturing industry. He is responsible for NAFTA. He's responsible for CAFTA. He's responsible for shipping millions of jobs out of America. How can you say that?
Well, Henry Kissinger has also been a big part of working with David Rockefeller. I know that.
And David Rockefeller is a man you would trust to be a New World Order leader of the world, and you would think that the Rockefeller family has ever cared about the interests of the individual?
Isn't the Rockefeller family one of the greatest American families of all time as far as industrialists go?
No, not at all. Some would argue that they're the opposite of that. Some would argue that the Rockefellers were not very good for the average worker, like the thousands of workers who were shot when they rioted against Rockefeller companies way back in the beginning. So let's put it aside. I'm going to read a few other names. Here's some other people at the Bilderberg Group. Robert Rubin. Do you know who he is?
I've heard the name.
Co-chairman, Council on Foreign Relations, former Secretary of the Treasury, and former president of Citibank. He's one of the engineers of the financial meltdown of America. Why would you trust him to put the interests of the people ahead of his own greed?
Back up a second. It's the Council of Foreign Relations. That was an organization established in the 50s.
But you didn't hear me when I just said Robert Rubin. You're jumping to the CFR. I just said Robert Rubin had been the head of Citibank when it melted down. Doesn't that concern you?
Oh, very much so. It should concern everyone.
Well, I'm sure you and I, even though you're a liberal and you're in the faith, doesn't mean that we have to disagree on everything. Now, why would the Bilderbergs invite a guy like Charlie Rose? Why would he be selected?
I can't answer that.
Because they select people who are their puppets or who will act out exactly what they want acted out on the American stage of the media and the government. Let's take another one. Robert Zoellick, president of the World Bank Group. Do you know who he is?
Scumbag.
Well, I didn't say that. I don't use those words. And I have a certain respect for prophylactics.
Hey, do you know Dr. Savage?
At least I can get a laugh out of you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The issue is that in America, the First Amendment was written to protect offensive speech. We don't need a First Amendment to protect polite speech, do we? I mean, everyone engages in polite speech. What do we need protections for? It's speech which provokes thought that is considered offensive and hateful by those who disagree with you, isn't it? And so, therefore, it's only speech we're talking about, not the acts of murderers. And to lump me in with murderers is defaming me. It's libeling me.
England's liberalism allows the virus of radical Islam to spread unabated, while conservatism would contain this virus. And yet this virus threatens to take over the world. And so therefore, Michael Savage was banned. The Savage Nation versus the Dying Nation. That's the story, ladies and gentlemen. Go to michaelsavage.com and check it out. It's a very important story that you can find at this time only on michaelsavage.com.
Wider still and wider shall my bonds be.
of the media continues to ignore the fact that I, Michael Savage, continue to be banned in Britain, I am the only member of the Western media banned by a Western nation. Can you believe this? But I want you to remember what the reaction was when this first took place. Here's an interview I did at the time with BBC Radio.
We contacted the Home Office again today, and they said they absolutely stand by their decision to exclude you. Quote, coming to the UK is a privilege that we refuse to extend to those who abuse our standards or values and undermine our way of life. What do you say to that?
Well, I would have thought that one of the standards and values of British life would have been giving a person an opportunity to meet their accuser. I would have thought that one of the standards and values of the British people would be giving a person an opportunity to explain whether or not they meant what they read somewhere. I'd like to know where Jackie Smith got these excerpts, because I think I know where they came from. After all, my show is not broadcast in the United Kingdom. So who in the United States government sent these to Jackie Smith in an attempt to destroy the conservative movement in America?
And then she asked me about coming to England.
You want to come to Britain in the near future?
You know, it's a great idea. I've always admired the English people. I've always been an Anglophile, going back to when I could first afford my first broken Jaguar 30 years ago. But the fact of the matter is, yes, when my name is removed and the socialists are swept out of power and the conservative government invites me to give a speech before Parliament explaining who I am and what I stand for, I'd be happy to come to England.
Of course, my interview with CNN was much more contentious. They try to make it about my views rather than England's ban.
Why don't you clear up some of the misconceptions? I want to ask you about your views about immigrants and illegal immigration.
Illegal immigration? It's in keeping with 80% of the American people. They want it stopped, and they want it stopped now. This country is sinking in red ink. This country is broke. This country cannot afford the welfare. This country cannot afford the legal care. This country cannot afford the education of illegal immigrants. We can no longer live in the 1950s. Moreover, there's a big difference between immigration and illegal immigration. I am the son of an immigrant. I'm a first-generation American. My grandfather waited online to become a citizen. You can't suddenly take people who run across the border and say, presto, you're a citizen, can you?
And some, like the Reverend David James Manning, were and are behind me 100%.
If we as Americans, and especially radio talk show hosts and listeners, if we let Great Britain, the United Kingdom, or England, or whatever they call themselves, get away with banning, with blacklisting Michael Savage, if we let him get away with that, then they're coming for you next. You better watch out, Rush. You and Sean, Bill O'Reilly, you might need my voice to come and defend you at some point. You better stand up now while you got the audience and the power. You're not going to do this to Michael Savage, United Kingdom and Northern Ireland, Gordon Brown and everybody else, Queen Elizabeth and whoever else. You're not going to do this to Michael Savage. It ain't going to happen. As of now, it's on between us and them. Michael Savage, we with you, bro. We got your back. We're going to stand with you. We'll show them over there with their stiff upper lips. We'll show them a thing or two right here, right now.
What is wrong with America? Worshipping a baseball coach on every channel as though the Pope died? And somber tomes like America lost a great man. Does anyone out there have any idea how idiotic this is? French Parliament approves burqa ban. I'm surprised they didn't read that in America Obama has imposed the burqa wearing. You know, in America, I think, Beowulf, we've gone from Don Corleone to Don Cora Bologna in one generation. Despite a new claim against Gore that he tried to stick a tongue down a woman's throat, people still believe in global warming. Australia has the coldest winter in 100 years. San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, cold, cold, cold summer. You wouldn't know that, would you? I believe that it is almost out of the hands of the American people. I believe that unless the Tea Parties get organized and come together and create one candidate, we're not going to see this revolution in November that the neocons and the others on the Republican side are predicting. And moreover, do I think we need that? I'm going to tell you something. Do you actually think that if we put that gang back in power, you're going to have a different America? The same gang that wrecked the country and gave it to Obama is suddenly going to come back and save you? Are you crazy? Are you out of your damn mind that you actually believe these schmucks in the radio tell you, well, the Republican resurgence, well, we're going to save this country. We're going to have smaller government. You're going to have smaller nothing. You're going to have the same garbage. Two card, Monty. There's no bean under either nut. Play some music for a minute.
All the stories have been told of kings in days of old, but there's no England now. All the wars that were won or lost somehow don't seem to matter very much.
Would you help me send a message to Hillary Clinton to get my name off that list of murderers and terrorists? It costs absolutely nothing. Just go to michaelsavage.com, click on the petition on the left side, and that's it. 85,000 people have done so. Maybe you'll be 85,000 and number one. And if you still haven't bought a copy of Banned in Britain, you can buy it on michaelsavage.com.
Savage.